Hey everyone, welcome to the Performance Marketing Minds podcast brought to you by Outbrain Direct Response. I'm your host, Joe Adana, and today I have one of my good friends joining me, Joe Higgins, a true expert in the world of search arbitrage. In this episode, we'll dive into how search arbitrage has evolved significantly over the years and why delivering quality traffic has become more critical than ever. We'll also discuss the challenges newcomers face in a crowded and competitive market, the impact of shifting compliance mandates, and the importance of adapting to a constantly changing industry landscape. This is a really good one, so without further ado, let's jump into my conversation with Joe Higgins. Enjoy the episode.
Probably, I was thinking about this as they show, you know, all the outpouring of love and, you know, mourning that's going on for him right now. I was thinking about, he absolutely had an impact on music, but because they did the TV show and because Sharon was such a presence and obviously she's one hell of a business person, right? She knew every step of the way that, you know, she was promoting in some capacity. What would happen if, say, Robert Plant or Jimmy Page passed away? Do you think we would get this same level that we're getting for Ozzy as far as like the, you know, the media impact on it? I mean, I'm not diminishing what Ozzy did at all. Huge. But you could argue that those guys were just as big, if not more, right?
And oh, yeah.
And we would probably not see that level just because they did the TV show. I think about stuff like that. See?
I agree. I think that Ozzy's not a meme, but there is this part of him that is attractive to younger people where it's like that old joke. It's like, can you name five Ozzy Osbourne or Black Sabbath songs? Mm-hmm. You know, and like, but they have a t-shirt from Urban Outfitters.
Right.
And you laugh because, you know, they do have this like crazy, they have this crazy media presence. But anybody, not to sound like a tool, but anybody like in the know, yeah, of course, right. Jimmy Page, when he passes away, it's like, yeah. That's a different category, but the reception's probably going to be different. You know, it's because there's a lot of young people now, like posting on Instagram and TikTok with like Ozzy Osbourne songs. It's like, oh my God, rest in peace, which yes, 1000%, I love him. Great, great musician, but.
And to your point, my mom probably knows who Ozzy is, but if I said, who's Robert Plant, she would say, what kind of plant? Exactly. So I get it.
Yeah. Well, that's a good segue. I mean, how the media presence that they had, tailoring it back into marketing world, performance marketing especially, mm-hmm. like what is going on in the search world right now? Because it seems like every week, month, you know, we're having these calls with feed providers and buyers acting skittish and differently. And, you know, now we're coming to the point where Google feed providers are going to be accessing the creative ads for any buyer that's buying on Outbrain, Meta, TikTok, and being able to make sure that their RSOC ads are compliant. And there's this overwatch that's going on, which is good from a compliance standpoint, but there's this part of me that's a little fearful that we're almost like coming to the end of something that was so big for so long. And I don't know, I haven't been in it as long as you, but you used to talk about like the email days when search arbitrage was big on email. And then one day Google decided, well, yeah, we're not doing this anymore.
Yeah. It goes back before the email stuff. I mean, it was the AFD channel was created to monetize park domains, AdSense for domains back in, I don't know, I think 2003, 2004, the first Google feeds were coming out. You know, arguably some of the best traffic out there, even better than search, because the intent of the user was greater than search. Search, you're looking for something, you're looking something up, and then you'll probably, or you might perform an action. But with type-in traffic, you were actually typing something in that you probably thought was the location of the business that you were going to, right? A lot of times it was misspells or fat fingered domains that people landed on. That traffic was high quality, high user intent. And And then when that started to come down, you had the email, as you mentioned. And again, really quality traffic. And then as Google got out of that, and they have their reasons for getting out of it, and I totally understand. I think the reasons for getting out of email are mirror what their reasons are for, you know, these compliance mandates that are coming down and maybe, you know, closing down AFD. It's just things are getting crazy with the creatives. But things are getting crazy with the creatives, Joe, because we're at peak levels right now. I mean, we really have a lot of people that are in this space. I mean, you know, since 2022, especially in 2023, it's just this influx of people, and I don't think the space can handle the amount of people. I mean, I told this to you before. I think that, you know, if you would have asked me maybe 7 years ago, I would have said there's about 500 people of consequence in the entire planet that do search arbitrage. And that would include all the people on the media buying side as well as on the service side of things. And now, I don't know what that number is, but it's certainly a lot more, probably 3,000 or more. And I just don't think that these different traffic sources, we're finding that there is a finite amount of people that are willing to click on these ads. And at one time, they were performing a service, and now as the ads just get a little bit crazy, you know, it's just clickbait. I mean, you see it from really seasoned people still. They'll do whatever they can, pushing the envelope with sexually suggestive creatives, anything to give themselves an edge. And everybody knows, especially those of us who've been doing this for so long, that that stuff's never going to pan out for the advertisers. So when you ask a high-level question, what's going on, I think Google is, they're probably trying to keep this going, but I don't think they want to keep it going at the detriment of their advertiser relationships. So,
yeah.
And when I say Google, that's just a habit. I mean, you know,
yeah, yeah.
That goes for the others as well.
Why do you think it was a secret for so long? Like, I remember in 2022 when people started, because it was running on native and Outbrain, but it wasn't, it was one of those things where it seemed like it popped up out of nowhere and then everyone was talking about it. And then all of our reps internally were overwhelmed. Like, what is this? How am I going to learn this? I have no idea what these people are doing compared to, you know, your traditional affiliate or even like content arbitrage. People were running content display arbitrage for years and years, and everyone knew what it was. It was slideshows. It was the infinite scroll stuff. It was trying to just monetize a user on display ads by capturing their attention. And now that's starting to dissipate a lot with all the made for advertising rules and stuff. But I feel like, 500 people of consequence in this monster industry. Maybe I wasn't paying attention, or like, well,
there was no reason to pay attention, because again, it starts back with park domains, right? The golden years of park domain. Park domains were from 2005 to maybe 2008. And then as that started to contract, and don't get me wrong, there were people, especially when you think about this in retrospect, there were people that were definitely doing arbitrage. I mean, I can remember seeing some funky data coming up on a random Tuesday. Like, how did this guy all of a sudden go from making $500 a day with his portfolio of domains, but now he's making $2,000 a day? That was probably arbitrage. So there was a handful of it going on. But for the most part, it was park domain traffic. And after 2008, that started to contract. I mean, more apps were coming out and people weren't fat fingering nearly as much. You know, you had autocorrect maybe on your browser. A whole host of things could have happened. So it's just out of necessity. What else can we do, right? What else can we monetize here? Email was by accident, how that sort of started to hit the AFD channel. And then when Google said no more of that, there was, on the heels of email, there was, you know, I remember Outbrain, seeing people run Outbrain. I mean, we had partners that were doing dental implants, you know, to the tune of several thousand dollars a day. And so it just was, there was something else there. But because the numbers of the people within the game itself, within the ecosystem, was so much smaller. Things happened organically. And then once you start having, you know, search arbitrage meetups and, you know, sponsored by, you know, various feeds and
yeah.
traffic sources and platforms, you know, at that point, the cat's out of the box. And so it just got big, and it got so big so quickly that the next thing didn't have its chance to organically come into view. And now there's just so many people vying for, you know, a little amount of traffic. And I think that's the situation we're in.
Yeah. Do you think there was a year that was a catalyst for it starting to explode? Because I feel like it was after COVID. I feel like it did have to do with the external marketing pushes of tracking companies or feeds or because there was a shift. It all of a sudden like started to get way out in the open. And you know how this world is, like when people are making money, they want nothing more than to sit with you at the bar in Vegas and tell you how much money they're making, and traffic is great. Yeah. And you know, nothing's wrong and you should definitely do this and I need more buyers. And you know, you started to see all these people asking questions, and us at an ad network, people were asking us questions like, should I do this?
Yeah.
And our answer was the same all the time. It was like, well, it's a totally different game. It's going to be way harder for you to succeed than you think, because you're going up against people that have been doing it for years and are so automated. And all of a sudden you had affiliates that were running lead gen campaigns for Solar and Medicare, and they're trying to manually launch 5 campaigns a day at a $50 budget. And, you know, trying to scale that against these major players that are in different countries and different languages, and like everything is back end automated and shifting around. And I don't know what year it was or if there was some major thing that happened, but I think it was just like the conferences that started to blow up.
I mean, I think it's, you could look to 22 to 23, you know, somewhere overlapping months between those years would seem, if you think about it enough, you could probably see the signs even before that, but definitely right there. That's when we reached our peak, I think, peak interest.
Yeah. So that's how I see it kind of happening too. I think peak interest is gone. Mm-hmm. I feel like people are kind of frustrated they couldn't get things to work, like the display arbitrage guys that are having a really hard time with all the new rules and legality around what they did, trying to come into the search field, banging their head against a wall. Same with affiliates. And now you're starting to see that wave kind of dissipate out, and still the same people remain. Mm-hmm. And they are the ones that are, you know, still committed, still trying to make it work. They're not spending as much as they were in 2023 for a lot of different reasons, like the shift to RSOC and AFT kind of getting put on the back burner. But it is it's crazy to see that bell curve happen and just shot up and then it's kind of coming back down a little bit.
Well, obviously, AFT, that was a little easier for people to get away with bad habits, putting it bluntly. And we all thought that, you know, RSOC was going to be different. Obviously it wasn't different enough, not even close. Otherwise I don't see how you have these compliance mandates that are coming down towards the end of this month. I mean, all this is conjecture, right? This is just, we're riffing here. But when you think about it, if everything was running ideally and advertisers were getting the best bang for their buck, then rates would be higher. You know, there wouldn't be these mandates coming down. It would be how it was a few years ago. And so I point to such mandates as proof, irrefutable proof that, you know, people in Mountain View, they want it done better. They're okay with it, but they want it done better and a lot better. So who knows? Who knows how this plays out? You brought up the question, where does this go next? I hope it filters out a lot of negative energy and you know, while I'm not naive enough to think that it's going to go back to 2020, I would like to see a little thinned out. I think that would be great.
Do you think that it's a recent thing, or have advertisers on the back end, if someone's running, you know, a sunglass keyword for search arbitrage, and, you know, they could go to Ray-Ban Sunglass Hut or whatever those links are. Do you think that, like, is it recent that they woke up to the fact that some of their traffic was coming from arbitragers and not just, you know, Google search or Yahoo search? Or have they always known that and put up with it, but now it got so big that they said no? Or is this something that, like, they were surprised? Like, was it a surprise to them to learn all of it?
I would guess it's a surprise. I mean, if you're a dentist down the street here in, you know, my small town in California, what are the chances you know, or the person you hire to run your monthly campaigns has any idea what's going on, right? At least what's the chances that they had an idea 3 years ago? Maybe now they've figured it out because, you know, their ROI hasn't been what they had hoped, and so they look under the hood a little bit more. But yeah, I mean, I think a lot of those people thought they were buying an actual search user. And then at the end of the day, to find out that it's not a search user, yeah, I think they were surprised by that. But it was allowed to go on for a period of time.
And it's, do you think that pressure, like, was it a mounting pressure from the advertisers of Google and people applying pressure to Google? And now they're starting to say, oh, okay, you know, time to reel it in a little bit. And it wasn't really, because why would you be proactive if I'm not trying to throw another network under the bus, but, like, why would you be proactive in cleaning it up unless you started to get some pressure from those companies?
Again, this is all just, I mean, I have no idea, but yeah, it would make sense that you wake up one day and, you know, revenues are exploding, but then you see the negative side of why those revenues are exploding. And so you try to figure it out with, you know, proper business decisions. Simple as that, right?
Yeah.
You're weighing the scales of justice, so to speak.
It's harder now, for sure, with all that into the mix.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, you know, look, I've been doing this, you know, with these search feeds for 20 years, and, you know, hopefully there's some time to go on. You talk to plenty of people and they're able to buy effectively. They're able to figure it out. Guys that are doing very white hat ways of buying, they're able to figure it out. Yes, it's harder, but it's harder because of how crowded it is. And that's what I'm saying. If it gets thinned out, then groups like that will have a chance. They'll have a chance to continue on. Right. So I think that there's a runway. We'll just have to see how these compliance mandates, what the net effect is of them.
Yeah. So my background is in sales, and, you know, telling people they shouldn't run something is the best part of the job because you can be honest with somebody and you can say, you know what? I think it's too saturated. You probably shouldn't do it. You don't have the tooling to do it. Whatever it is. It can be a standalone e-commerce offer. It can be search arb. It can be anything. But more recently, I've been kind of telling people to maybe stay away from the space a little bit. Not that I don't want their money and the network doesn't want their money, because that's how we get paid. But, like, the longevity of the business and making, you know, allowing them to basically earning their trust, you know, and you guiding them in the right direction. So these people that, like, I guess it's a long-winded answer to say, do you think it's too late for somebody new to kind of come and conquer this form of advertising? And do you think it's really up to the main, you know, 15 players that are the guys that just carry this space for the next 3 years? Or do you think there's still room for people to come in that are smart and scrappy to make headway?
It's difficult, Joe, because there's so many feeds out there right now, right? Like, if you took, again, most of this pertains to Google because that's, you know, what I've been working with the most over the last several years. But there used to be, you know, if you took in both channels that were participating in what we're talking about, you know, there were like 10 groups that were syndicating. And now, you know, there's several thousand out there with access to do this. So I would venture to say that you can find people, you know, I'm on YouTube, you know, during the day, and you see some hot shit drummer coming up and you're just amazed, like, holy cow, I thought Neil Peart was the greatest. I thought John Bonham was the greatest. I thought Buddy Rich was the greatest. And I'm looking at these young kids who are literally smoke all of these guys, even Buddy Rich, as crazy as it is to say, who would smoke all of these guys. And so you can probably apply that everywhere. If somebody is intelligent enough and has the time and puts in the 1,000 hours, they'll figure it out. It doesn't matter how, you know, what the economics are. They will figure it out, and they'll figure it out in a white hat way. But that's not what we're always dealing with. We tend to deal with groups that want to scale. They want to, you know, take more market share. They're owned by a publicly traded company, so they're willing to bend the rules and da da da. You know what I mean? On both sides of the game. And so that's, we'll have to see. I think that there's opportunity for people to figure it out. But I think for a person that's literally just looking to say, hey, what can I do to make some fast money? That's gone. I think that time has passed. And so those of us still working within the ecosystem, within the industry, we just have to get used to the economics being much, much less, things being much smaller. Instead of working with 300 groups, you work with a fraction of that amount. Instead of, you know, revenues the way they were in 23 and 24, you got to get used to revenues being different and then expand into different areas in order to, you know, pick up the slack.
I might have stolen this from you, but mm-hmm. all great ideas are stolen. So what I tell people is, like, and I literally think it's from you. If you don't have $10,000 to light on fire, then you probably shouldn't be testing this right now.
Sure, plenty of people have said that. Because yeah. I did not come up with that, but I have said that a few times.
See, so yeah. It's a trickle-down effect. Yeah,
exactly. And so yeah. This gets back to, let me just add that, because there's a relationship here. So last year, I was at one of those Search Our meetups, and somebody was, you know, giving... He was talking about how he made several thousand dollars of this one ad. It was complete bullshit because two reasons. Number one, I knew what the person was doing because we were dealing with his non-compliant ads on our platform, and it had nothing to do with the several slides that he was trying to portray to the room of 250 people who were watching him. Okay, so that's number one. And number two, if you could make several thousand dollars, why would you tell people how to make several thousand dollars? Like, it's just, you know, I would gladly teach people how to play drums because there is a finite amount of drummers that the world could have, right? But there's only a certain amount of traffic. So why do you want to teach someone your secrets when it comes to that? In the domain days, I could understand a domainers meetup because guys traded domains, guys went in and bought domains together, things like that. But it's different when you're dealing with search, right? Search arbitrage. Why would you want to tell someone your secrets? So those are the two reasons that it was crazy. But when the person was changing the slides, they had probably 10 slides in their deck. I would say 30% of the room would stand up with their cell phones and they would take pictures of the new slide that was coming on. So these were obviously brand new people. And I think that someone like those people, they're probably already moved on right now. Mm-hmm. They're going to find it really difficult to make money in this.
So then what do the new people do? Because there's so much fluff in everything. And I always, when I get an email from somebody or I get a, you know, inbound message and they say, I'm spending this much money, I cut it in half. Sometimes I do 25% because I'm just like, yeah, there's no way. You're probably bullshitting me through this node. And there's where do people even find the right info? Like, are there people out there that actually are sharing the struggles along with the triumphs? Or is it literally just like getting your hands dirty and testing with it and trying to figure it out yourself? Or is there any actual good resource out there and blueprint?
To figure out how to do it on your own? Are you talking about being a media buyer?
Yeah.
And I've been on the service side of things so long that that would be tough for me to answer. I will tell you this. There are some groups out there that, you know, reputable groups at varying levels of being reputable. They're always looking for media buyers. And there's two schools of thought. You could be somebody who's looking for a media buyer that already knows how to buy. And there are some groups that do that, but then there's some groups that don't want that. They want to teach people from day one, the steps, their process. And what I have found is those are the groups that are actually more successful. When you look at everything on a whole, the groups that are out there looking for experienced media buyers, they have a hard time scaling for whatever reason. But the groups that say, hey, we'll just take anybody who, you know, show some intelligence and we want to teach them, those are the groups that seem to be able to expand. I don't know why, but that's the way it is. So if I was a media buyer and I want to try to do this, look, there's people out there with their LinkedIn profile that literally say search arbitrage. I never thought it would come to that, but there's plenty of people out there that actually put search arbitrage on their LinkedIn profile. Just go find one of those people and see if you can get a shot at media buying with them. That would,
yeah.
I'm not one to lend advice, but that would be what I would do.
Well, I think to your point, it's like the people that in any space of performance marketing, the people that can make money on their own, they're not really looking for the job to get hired as a great media buyer at a company, right?
Well, and they'll burn a lot less money if they do go through that route.
Mm-hmm.
If they do come on as a media buyer first, otherwise it's going to be their money. And like I said, if you get 10 G's to, and that's probably being really conservative now, Joe.
I mean, I didn't want to scare people too much.
That was probably 10 grand. That was probably in 23. I said that, but I would think now double that. Like, honestly, you know, with the market conditions, the way things are, they're going to go through a lot less money if they get hired on. And cut their teeth that way.
So. This is related but unrelated, but we're hiring a salesperson. Uh-huh. And I have always been in the mindset to where you find good people that you can mold. And not that I or we or anybody knows absolutely the best way to do things and the best way to run a sales organization and the best way to follow up with people and all this stuff. But we had a interview this week, and it was very junior level girl who is in the art industry as an account manager. Mm-hmm. And she wants to be a salesperson, super smart, intellectual, apparently graduated summa cum laude, which I don't even know how to spell. From my end, but super smart, like can understand the technical stuff, bookworm, but no sales experience. And we're going to have a couple interviews over the next week. And, you know, some people have sales experience and you know, I haven't talked or seen a resume or anything like that yet, but there's this, I almost have like a negative, view on people that are career salespeople, because either they rest on their laurels or they, you know, if they're looking for a new job, it's maybe they blame the company for targets or, you know, there's any type of reasons why people are looking for jobs. But yeah, to my end too, I just, that's what I look for personally. Like when I hire people, it's not even necessarily like, have you done it before? And what were your targets hit and all this kind of stuff. I would much rather take the very personable individual
who wants to do it.
Yeah, who has a true desire to do it.
Of course. Yeah, I think most people would give that person a shot. I can't say if most people would specifically only hire, you know, the beginning level, the entry level, but I think a lot of people would give that person a shot. I think that's that's no brainer. Yeah. But again, I mean, you know, just getting back to the whole reason that we're talking about this is it's really crowded. We'll see how the next, you know, 6 to 12 months plays out here. And I realize I sound old and what have you. Oh my God. Somebody who's been doing this long that just doesn't want people. It's not the case at all. I'm just, you can see it. You can see the evolution, how the channels, the ecosystem just can't support this amount of, you know, input happening. That's mm-hmm. really what's leading to all of this. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out. I mean, again, talking about LinkedIn, just a week or so ago, there was someone, let me see if I can get this story right. You may have seen it. I don't know how I came across it, but it was someone on LinkedIn and they were basically sounding the alarm about a business relationship they had. So their company worked with another company and that second company, Company B, did not pay them, has not paid them for several months. And that's terrible. I hope they figure it all out and it works out. But the story goes on where Company B, who won't pay, was supposed to provide Company A with Bing N2S tags for them to drive traffic to, and instead provided that company with an AFD feed to drive traffic to. So, and this person is sounding the alarm about these guys are crazy, don't do business with them. And I'm sitting there reading it and I'm going, how did your media buyers and or the people you work for not realize the difference between an AFD feed and a Bing feed? Mm-hmm. You know, that's number one. And number two, do you realize that on LinkedIn, you're talking about sub-syndication, which pretty much anybody who's been doing this for even a few years would say, hey, keep that, like, you shouldn't do that. And definitely it's not something you want to advertise about, you know, in such a big format. So again, I hope it all works out. But the point of that, Joe, is we're dealing, it's just too crowded. Like that type of conversation shouldn't take place. You know what I mean? Certainly shouldn't take place on a forum like LinkedIn. So that's it.
Yeah.
You know, again, we'll see how all this plays out. And in the meantime, look, plenty of things that you can do online. It is getting harder. I mean, ads have run their course, man. They've been going for a long time. But at the end of the day, these demand sources, they're all looking for quality traffic. And as long as there's quality traffic out there, and you and I have to assume that that still exists, there will be a way to drive that traffic. There will be that yearn for it. So,
yeah, it definitely still exists. And I think our challenge internally at an ad network is finding it and sourcing it and giving it to the right buyer. Mm-hmm. And some of the things that have really helped us and lended a hand, and it's rare, but again, it kind of speaks to the bigger buying networks and the people that are doing a significant amount of volume and have for years and have the technical prowess, is when they get their quality metrics from the feed providers or, you know, Google, Yahoo, whoever they're using. And we can now start to, you know, ingest those quality metrics and throttle traffic on certain sources and up traffic on some. And we start to really understand the whole network and where we're buying inventory. Because now ad networks are, a lot of people are bidding on the same traffic. Everyone's a DSP and everyone's trying to fight for the same inventory. And, you know, the premium publishers of the world, like CNN or Fox News, MSN, New York Post, whatever, are starting to see a major decline in just organic page views, because with the Google AI description or people just writing into the AI trying to find out the answers and stuff, they don't need to click on the news article and go to the publisher and read the story. They get it in bullet points with the hyperlinks and they find everything else out that they need. So the main challenge now is how do we find, the quality inventory that isn't being fat fingered and clicked on, or isn't some rewarded or incentivized traffic that isn't going to be a quality user and doesn't take action. But how do we find the needles in this huge, huge haystack of the open internet? And the only way we get that is by our partners being partners to us and giving us that info to try and source it for them and try and find it. So now all of the back end bidding and everything like that is starting to take it into effect, and the data has been super, super helpful. But that's the way I see it going over the next couple of years. Like the ones that are able to have the understanding and can share the back end and not just the conversion rate and not just the click-through rate on the landing page, but like how are the feeds actually judging this traffic? Those are the ones that are going to win. And I feel like there's only going to be a handful of people that are able to do that at scale and want to do it. And if you don't have that, then you're going to get hit a month down the line and you're going to ask us, why did you provide us this junk traffic? And it's really hard for the network to control the pipes to even understand what's quality to one provider is not quality to this e-commerce offer and vice versa. So it's all kinds of different inventory that we need to weed through. But that's how I think what's going to carry things, at least on our end, like speaking from our network side, like that's the thing that's going to help. Yeah. Not let people spend $300,000 a day on the platform anymore, like the good old days, but you know, mid six figures, we're feeling good. We know quality's good. We're scaling sustainably every day. And you know, we'll take this and we're happy with this.
And the demand sources, you know, at least on the search side of things, they provide very limited information and data. It's very macro level. And I think to what you're asking, the feeds, you know, have to be able to interpret that and willing to interpret that information and say, hey, look, this is what we can take. You know, there's, instead of a fire hose, it's going to have to be a straw. Mm-hmm. It literally is. But it's possible. But like you said, the good old days were more of a fire hose, more of a garden hose, at least. Now we're down to a straw. So that again, it's not going to be easy, but there are plenty of groups on both sides that are making this work. So,
yeah. So closing thoughts, are there still hope? You know, don't get too scared. There's still hope. There's still ability.
I mean, the real successful people in this industry, any industry, then they just pivot. They figure it out. They go on to the next thing. So, you know, I was just, as somebody that had been working in that one particular channel, it's sort of sad to see that channel kind of come to such an unceremonious end, because it had pivoted so much. The channel was doing these pivots I'm talking about and figuring things out along the way. And then, you know, to see it just, that's kind of wild. But, you know, I'll pivot. My group will pivot. We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
That's what I do. It's either this or flipping burgers at the nearby casino. And so this is much better.
I know. When I retire, I'm going to be a mailman. I already told my wife. I was like, that's what I'm going to do. I like talking to people. It'll get me, keep me in shape, keep me tan.
There you go.
That's my retirement, I like it, man. Plan.
I'm thinking of cheers.
Cool. All right, man. Well, thanks for hopping on for a little bit. Yeah, I appreciate the knowledge, wisdom.
Look forward to seeing you soon. Take care.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll see you in New York. Later.